Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. Today is Wednesday, the 8th of July. I'm Kerry Lanigan. First up, we've got the latest overnight news from our partners at Bloomberg.
Crude oil prices are higher at this hour after the U.S. launched a new series of airstrikes on Iran. These actions follow an Iranian attack on three vessels in the Strait of Hormuz. U.S. Central Command says the strikes were meant to impose heavy cost for targeting commercial shipping crewed by innocent civilians in an international waterway. And we got reaction from Jonathan Panikoff, senior director at the Atlantic Council.
I think for the Iranians, there's not a lot more leverage to be gained. They've gone from having one big piece in the nuclear weapons program to having two with control over the Strait of Hormuz. And for the U.S., it's not likely that any additional attacks are really going to have an impact on changing this new regime's mind or willingness to concede points that are already seen to be heavily in Iran's favor. So I think there's still a fairly good chance that you get to a moment of de-escalation. The problem is, every time this happens, it gets a little harder to put it back in the box the next time and just to revert to the status quo.
Now, those Iranian attacks prompted the U.S. Treasury to revoke a waiver allowing for the sale of Iranian crude oil. Now, Iran says both the U.S. military operation and the waiver revocation were violations of that memorandum of understanding reached last month, and the Iranians have vowed to take decisive actions in response. Today, the NASDAQ 100 fell 1.8% on the same day SpaceX joined the index. SpaceX shares were down 6.8% today, while the S&P 500 fell 0.4%. The U.S. stock listing for SK Hynix is multiple times oversubscribed ahead of its pricing on Thursday. We are told the South Korean memory chip maker's offering has drawn strong demand from global long-only funds and technology-focused investors. Yesterday, SK Hynix began marketing nearly 178 million ADRs, valued at about $28 billion. We go to Ankara, Turkey next, where the NATO summit is underway. Member nations have agreed to at least $50 billion in defense industry deals as a way of showing President Trump that Europe is heeding his calls for more spending. Now, some of the contracts do show that Europe is moving to locally source some equipment it previously bought from the U.S. Here is Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Hordern.
We know that instead of Boeing, they're going to Saab for some sort of aircrafts. So there are going to be other manufacturers they bring into the fold. Because remember, this meeting is about trying to meet the target they set last year. And that was a 5% of GDP defense target, 3.5% going to all of the hardware, ammunition, the tools you're going to need to build that industrial base, and then 1.5% the support, the bridges, the roads, the ports, when it comes about providing the infrastructure for a defense industrial base.
That is Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Hordern. War in Ukraine was also a focus at the summit. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told NATO allies to increase their supply of Patriot missile systems. Zelensky said that ballistic missiles are Russia's last major advantage.
We all value the Patriot system. It's an excellent system, and there are others as well, but today's wars have shown that current Patriot production is not enough to meet the growing demand for protection against ballistic missiles. That is a fact.
Now, Zelensky and President Trump are set to meet tomorrow.
Political commentator Solly Mueng joins Chris Stein to unpack Ramaphosa's controversial cabinet appointments and the DA's deepening credibility problem as the Leon Steenhuisen mudfight rolls on. The full interview is on biznews.com.
How is it going? Look, these guys are always looking for the lowest hanging fruit in anything. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, last week, we were thinking this immigration thing is going to be the big thing. Now, we don't know anymore how the corruption, Madlanga was going to come out of Madlanga. Ramaphosa continued piling up, you know, old people that we thought we had died. I'm not talking about age in terms of old in terms of age, but old in terms of people who've been used before, who failed before, who've been discarded, some of whom were fired by Zuma in 2013, Dina Pule. We thought this lady no longer existed. And suddenly, boom. I ended law, boom. I mean, like, so I mean, what message are these politicians sending to South Africans in terms of their credibility? The DA, of course, as you know, is also being questioned. It said his credibility with this whole, it's being hoisted on his own petard by the revelations by John Steyn, Yesen, and Tony Leon coming to defend his political party, and poor Jordan Hill Lewis trying to look ahead. It's like, I'm not getting involved in this stuff. It's hectic.
Well, not only did President Cyril Ramaphosa appoint Dina Pule to cabinet, but also Ayanda Dlodlo as ambassador to France, where the previous ambassador apparently jumped out of the window.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy, isn't it? If you really think about it, Paris is a very important diplomatic position for South Africa. This is where we interact with the EU. France is a big player in the European Union. The people that we send there must be robust. They must be credible. They must be strong. They must know what they're talking about. And they must stand firm for South Africa and by extension, for Southern Africa. Now, when you send people there who have all sorts of crazy past, I think it's unfortunate because you know what? The world watches. We mustn't be naive. Each time we send somebody out there, these people who receive, the receiving states, in this case, France and the EU, will have gone into the profile of this Ayanda Dlodlo. They will say, who is this lady? I know that at some point she was chief of the intelligence services and minister of intelligence. But she hasn't got a brilliant record. I mean, it is painful because South Africa has got amazing men and women who can be sent out there in these very strong, powerful forum, multilateral organizations to represent us proudly. But the ANC still looks in its own dustbin of people they've thrown in the past to see, okay, maybe this one, people have forgotten who they are. Let's use them again. But no, we can do far better than that. The ANC needs to stop thinking that South Africa belongs to the ANC because it doesn't.
Veteran political columnist William Saunderson Mayer on what happens next for Steenhuisen. Ambassadorship, political exile, or something stranger still? Listen to the full interview on the BizNews Daily Edge.
The talk within some party circles is that he's very keen on an ambassadorship to some vaguely interesting country with a reasonable standard of living, you know, good public transport and nice weather. I don't know that's true. I mean, ANC has put out many of its politicians to pasture as ambassadors. We could do worse than Steenhuisen. But it would have to be signed off by the DA, and it would have to be signed off by the ANC. So what would be the quid pro quo for the ANC in signing off on something like that? I don't know. But that's the one rumor. I don't know. To that degree, I'm baffled that he believes there is clearly no option for him in the corporate world unless there's someone with deep pockets and a kind heart who is willing to take him on in a commercial sense as a sinecure, give him a job in the way that we used to do with old retired crocked rugby players. You know, we'd park them off in a back office somewhere, and they'd be rolled out for public relations purposes at the appropriate moment. I mean, maybe you could do that with Steenhuisen, but this is not what his life should have been or could have been.
That's why I asked if the guy's dim, because in off air when we were talking earlier, because it does make one think that he didn't really think this one through properly, unless he's got, and he doesn't seem to be that dim, unless he's got an option somewhere. So can we expect a Kortbroek kind of consequence here, where he suddenly sees the light and joins the ANC? Is that something that you would put in his future? Because surely to goodness, if the DA has to sign off on an ambassadorship and the damage he's done to the party, you've got to believe that there are enough a balance of power in the DA to say no way. And certainly their voters and their donors would also be saying, what the heck are you guys doing if you stand for principles and rights? So what would it surprise you to see him popping up at another political party?
It would surprise me for no other reason, not because I don't think that politicians are not that duplicitous that they might do so, or that thick-skinned that they might not do so. But I think it would completely destroy his credibility because of the way it's happened. If he had a Damascene moment and had walked out after quietly discussing his reservations with Gil Lewis, he could get away with it. But it is such a blatant, it is so obvious now the way he's allowed it to unfold. I don't think he could survive it. On the other hand, the DA has an enormous problem. What do they do about him? They can't possibly let him remain as a deputy minister in Parliament. Gil Lewis is not in Parliament. Here you have this surly, rebellious, shit-stirring former leader sitting in Parliament, causing all kinds of trouble, holding sway over Parliament, over GNU appointments that are close buddies of his and who owe him allegiance. And Gil Lewis is sitting in Cape Town as mayor of Cape Town and trying to run the party at arm's length. You can't allow, after what Stienhuysen has done, he has no future in the DA at all. I think the only question is, do you get rid of him out of his position now, 3 months before a local government election, or do you wait and hope that it doesn't cause too much embarrassment over the next 3 months and then get rid of him after the local government elections in November.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes. Bonitas, medical aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
Trade expert Donald Mackay unpacks the Sharia-Roslin deal and why South Africa's automotive subsidy program, costing taxpayers over 40 billion rand a year, is the real story behind the headlines. Check out biznews.com for more.
No, so I can't really comment on the Chinese side of this transaction, but our automotive industry in South Africa is built on a fairly complicated subsidy program. So at the heart of manufacturing cars in South Africa is a subsidy program. And put differently, if you took away the subsidy, we wouldn't make cars in South Africa. And Chery, just like all of the other producers, is going to take full advantage of that program. Otherwise, they would never have done the deal to purchase the Nissan factory.
Okay, but surely at some point in time, you're going to imagine that there'll be other manufacturers who'll be coming in, because the European companies are getting outpriced in the South African market in a big way, and they don't get subsidies. And we do know that 4% of GDP goes to subsidize Chinese manufacturers. So it just seems as though they've got an unfair advantage. Whether or not we should have subsidy in the first place, we're going to talk about in a moment. But doesn't this open the gates for, say, VW then selling off its plant to another China, BYK, or another Chinese manufacturer, or someone else from another part of the world that is also producing different type of or cheaper products, and so that they too can come and take advantage of this?
Yes, absolutely. So the alternative we've got to look at very carefully, which is for many of these plants, which are not viable. And the next target that comes to mind for me is Mercedes-Benz in East London. If you're not producing vehicles at a profitable rate, there's a point at which either the government is going to have to lift subsidies to a point that will never get through National Treasury, or you close up, or you find someone else who can make it work. So, I would far rather not have the plant close than to concern myself with who purchased it. But we must be honest and say, this is not a normal commercial transaction as you would have with any other acquisition from abroad.
How so?
Well, the consumer in South Africa effectively funds the subsidies. We do that in a couple of ways. The one is but we pay a fairly significant premium on our cars because they are made locally, or even because they are imported by a local manufacturer. So the biggest hit consumers take through the subsidies, we pay more for cars. Now, the argument is made, well, it's worth it because making cars in South Africa has a very deep value chain. Maybe their argument's right or not. We will find out when the review of the APDP is completed. But it does come with a cost. In addition to that, there are direct subsidies, so cash given to these companies. There are taxes foregone. And so the issue goes on. And in the last Treasury set of numbers, we were over 40 billion rand a year. If we combine all of the different types of subsidies for automotive, which is effectively going to seven companies. So it's a lot of money.
And finally, Bloomberg reports on Reform UK leader Nigel Farage announcing he's resigning as an MP and forcing a by-election in his own constituency, putting himself up for a public verdict on his conduct.
I've thought about it hard, and I've decided today I will resign as a Member of Parliament for Clacton-on-Sea, thereby forcing a by-election, which should happen, I hope, in short order. No, I've decided that the people of Clacton should be the judges of my actions. This will be a people versus the establishment by-election. It's a chance to stick two fingers up to the entire establishment, to frankly tell them where to go. And that is why I will be putting my name forward to stand in this by-election. I will fight to win. I will fight to continue the political revolution that Reform has started. And I would say this to you, the voters of Clacton. If I win, you win. Because if I lose, they win. And we will never, with the two old parties, get the type of fundamental change that we need to fix broken Britain.
That's it for this morning's BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.